name is Ryan Stacey, and welcome to the Hockey Minds podcast. This podcast is powered by Instat, the leader in video and data analysis. Instat Hockey supports all levels of our game worldwide, with video breakdowns and or scouting services. For more information, you can visit Instat on the web at instatsport.com or on Twitter at InstatHockey. Today I'm joined by Jason Fortier, assistant coach with the University of Maine. With a long career in the game, Jason has taken on multiple roles working as a head coach, assistant coach, and general manager positions, ranging from the AAA loop all the way to his current position at the University of Maine. With a keen eye for evaluating, Jason shows just how important it is to understand different areas of hockey operations and applies it daily, which you will learn about today. With that, here's Jason Fortier, assistant coach with the University of Maine. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Jason Fortier, assistant coach with the University of Maine. Jason, thanks for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on and learn more about your experiences, kind of going through your resume and following along with you for a while here. There's a lot of positions, and I think what's really interesting is just kind of the progression through the levels. You know, a lot of times guests maybe have a hard time comprehending how people kind of skip some levels along the way, and sometimes it's connections or just right place, right time. But one of the things I found really interesting about your career is you kind of have really coached at every level through the junior ranks, through the minor hockey ranks. And I think it'll be interesting just to see how that progression came throughout your career. But first and foremost, let's just learn more about you as a person. Maybe give some background on where you're from, playing sports in your early years, and just give people some more content on you overall.
Yeah, you know what? I was a youngster. I grew up in Northern Ontario, you know, played hockey, baseball, golf, tennis, played every sport, just, you know, with the neighborhood kids, played competitive baseball. Now, you filter in as you get older with squash, rugby, and different types of sports. It was something that, you know, growing up in Northern Ontario, you got to play a lot of different sports. And, you know, we would always find ourselves at the schoolyard playing, and hockey was a passion. My father was a pro, and so I wanted to grow up and be like him, and I dedicated myself when I went to high school to become a better hockey player, and I don't think I amassed the grand totals of, you know, superstardom for hockey, but, you know, along the way, I was the rink rat. I was the bad boy. I was a kid that was always around adults and, you know, learning and listening and, you know, seeing things sometimes that maybe you shouldn't see with guys that were really competitive. And then the one thing that sticks out to me is the competitive, you know, basketball or baseball, slow pitch. You know, growing up in Northern Ontario, you see these older guys that are working 9 to 5, but when they're out there playing hockey or whatever it is, they're giving 100%. So that was something that resonated with me as a youngster, and I don't think I carried it over as a player as well. But as a coach, you know, you start to coach and learn from your mistakes, and you want to transfer over all the information you have to the younger generation and learn from the mistakes you've made, quite like your parents would say, you know, I did this and made that mistake, so don't do the same thing I did. So I grew up playing junior hockey in Northern Ontario. Then I advanced, played a little bit in the OHL. I think kill-wise and all that stuff, I was good, but the mindset of, you know, not getting ice time, you know, being a guy that was just a fourth-line guy was hard on me at the time, and I didn't set myself up for success mentally. And then I advanced, and I ended up playing and having success in junior hockey and had a couple cups of coffee in the East Coast Central League. I played a year over in Europe and Germany and Holland. But I knew I wanted to coach, so I got into coaching at quite a young age after, you know, coming back from Europe and playing college hockey in Canada. I got into coaching right when I stopped playing at around the age of 26.
Yeah, and we'll definitely go through the career, and there's a lot of different coaching positions. And one of the challenges that a lot of coaches that we've had on the podcast talk about is, you know, going through these levels, you're learning so much, you're trying to pass on that information, but specifically at the AAA level, you know, there's so much going on, and you're really influential on these kids. So you're trying to do it the proper way and then dealing with everything else that comes with that task. But For you, that first coaching position was with the Vaughn Kings, the U18 AAA team. So maybe just talk about that experience and just the entry into the coaching field following your time as a player.
Yeah, it was working at an arena, actually, and I was helping out with Peter Zezel and a guy named Dan Blackburn from Toronto Nats. So they were like the real first team that I helped out with on ice. But an opening came up with Vaughn. I had to do the coaching clinic. So once I got my coaching certificate, I ended up starting to coach right away with them as an assistant coach. It was U16 that year, and it was pretty rewarding. It was kind of like eye-opening that how much you love it as a coach versus you wish you would have had that same passion all the time for the game as a player. And so, you know, my job was more of building relationships with the players, having players bounce ideas off me. And then eventually through that year, I started, you know, about a month and a half, 2 months into the season with Vaughn, that they ended up removing the coach, which was unheard of for me, minor hockey. So he got removed. They brought in another coach. I worked under him for about 2 weeks, and they removed him. And here I am thinking, wow, is this what minor hockey is in Toronto? I had no idea. And so the parents kind of rallied around me and said, well, why don't we let this young guy, the kids like him, why don't we give him a shot? And so I took over a team that was in last, and, you know, I learned the hard way. You learn from a lot of losses, but you learn how to teach stuff and how to go through the process. And I was fortunate because they didn't have the stress of, oh, I have to have a winning team. They were dead last, so we had nowhere to go but up. And we did well. We moved up, and the next year I kept the same team. And I went back to midget, which was U18 now. And, you know, we had a number of players go on to junior, and some ended up going to college. And just being with that Vaughn team for 5 years, we went from being a bottom dweller to a top team last 2 years. So it was exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like a great experience, and I think anytime you're in a situation where maybe the pressures of like you said, being that top team at the beginning, isn't there, and I think especially in minor hockey where the focus really should be development, you can kind of go about it the right way and develop your players and work on that side of it. And that's kind of where the success ultimately comes from, as you've seen towards the end of your tenure there. And the next position I kind of want to make my way into is your time with the Vaughn Vipers of the OJHL, kind of working in a dual role as a GM and head coach. Break down that experience and ultimately what you learned in your time there at the junior level.
Well, I learned a lot from minor hockey, and I think some of the mistakes today's generation, I would call the youth, the younger coaches that are, you know, understanding maybe how to use video, plus coaching and the development side. I was fortunate that I got involved in coaching right when video was becoming a little bit more pronounced, so I had a techie side to what I was doing, which helped me a lot. And then when I got the opportunity to be a GM head coach Vaughn, it was something that when you're building teams in, say, Toronto, it's pretty easy. You know, you're basically a GM of a minor hockey team where you're trying to recruit, find players, evaluate players. The recruiting never ends, so it was a good learning lesson from minor hockey, then going to junior and then working on trades and various things like that. That gave me a little bit of an idea. Obviously, you have to learn how to make trades and, you know, what do you want to do? Are you trying to win every trade? Are you trying to make the right move for the program? You know, sometimes you lose a trade, but you win in the long run. There's a lot that goes into it, but I think the big part of being a head coach and general manager in junior hockey is, what is your time frame? If you're looking at it on a short window or a long window, if you've got 1 year or 2 years and you're worried about every year, well, then you never want to sell to be good 2 years down the road, because you don't know if you're going to be there for 2 years down the road. So in junior A, you learn how to maybe make deals and not have to go through complete rebuilds. But you know, then there's that risk of if you're going to make trades, or you're going to select players that you have to develop for a year or two, you may not be with them long enough to really see that to fruition. So I was able to find what worked for me in our program, and it was extremely rewarding. You know, coaching junior hockey and working with kids and helping them get to major junior or NCAA, and I focus predominantly NCAA.
Yeah, and again, it's all about kind of learning the new positions, and anytime you make a jump, especially from the minor hockey level to the OJHL junior A level in Ontario, you know, both leagues with a lot of different players coming in, a lot of highly sought after players. So it's a learning process just on how everything navigates. And like you said, in that head coach and GM role, you're kind of balancing the short-term goals, long-term goals as well, and trying to see what direction you want to go in. And following your time with that organization, you actually would go back into the AAA loop with the Toronto Young Nats in their midget program, and had a lot of success during that time as well. So maybe just talk about some of the things that you took away from junior now back into the AAA level, and just talk about some of those runs and the success that you've seen with that program.
Yeah, so I guess what ended up happening is I coached for 5 years with Vaughn in the minor system, and then I think it was five or six, but let's say it's five, and then I did junior A for 4 years, and we had three really good teams, and we had the one that was a rebuild 500 type club, and that was my last year there. We had a really young team, but we took off. We did extremely well, and we were positioned to be extremely strong, but the OJHL was trying to rebrand and reduce teams, so they ended up shutting down Vaughn. So I didn't have a team when the season ended. I didn't realize when the playoffs were over, you know, we had nothing official until the last 2 weeks of our playoff run. And then, you know, by that time, every team's got their head coaches pretty much. And so what ends up happening is we fold. I don't have a job, so I end up going back to midget with the Toronto Titans for a year. And I got the team initially the week of tryouts, and it was very stressful because I felt like I was on the up and up, and I was just going through a divorce. So I was married and I had a full-time job for my first 9 years coaching. And it was a lot of work. And I'm sure I had a lot of shortcomings as a coach and a husband and various other matters, that it was a little tougher to do when you're working full time, because you have to dedicate so much time to the video, and it was tough. So I ended up going to midget that year, and we had a tremendous season, finished in second place. You know, they were dead last year before, so it was kind of an eye opener to everyone. And then I was approached during the year. A fellow guy in the OJHL was very impressed with what we did, and he was impressed with how they actually beat us out in the playoffs when I was in Vaughan, and he was impressed with the amount of talent we built and played hard with a young team. And so he decided to offer me the job with the Toronto Patriots. So I was with the Titans, then I went to the Patriots. And at the same time, the Titans organization, I was going to build the Titan program 18U under the same roof as the Toronto Patriots. So that was all set up. But then at the last minute, the Toronto Titans said, well, because you're going to junior, we want to bring our own guy, because I was going to hire a guy to be the head coach, and I'm kind of program director assistant. And I'd always had a ton of respect for the Nats, the way they always treated me. They were in our rink. I called up their U18 coach and told him what was going on, and he's always bugged me about doing stuff together. And then, you know, our two minds came together, and we decided to put the Nats with the Patriots for the time I was there. And, you know, we ended up building a powerhouse at U18 and junior A.
Yeah, and I think whenever you have people in your corner who you can collaborate with and like-minded people, you can help build these programs. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people don't realize, that especially in the GTHL and these areas with a lot of teams and a high density of elite players, sometimes it's good to build the programs together and have a connection where you can bounce ideas between the junior and the U18 and kind of help players on both sides. So it was interesting just to hear how that process kind of came about, and then also, you know, hearing how the Toronto Patriots came into play. And you had some success there, definitely. You know, the accolades with the AAA program, going to the being the champions of TELUS Cup and obviously seeing success in Ontario. You know, you do that as a coach and you have success while also being in the junior game. Eventually, more opportunities come your way. And the next opportunity that we can kind of dive into is your time in the QMJHL with the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. A very different situation, a little bit of a smaller place in the GTA. But again, another great program to be a part of. So walk us through the process of joining that organization and then your time in the queue with that team.
Yeah, so with the Toronto Patriots, my first year there, we blended the programs. So we had the Nats working out with our players, coming on the ice for skill stuff, almost like a mentorship with the Big Brothers. And even our junior A team would show up to the rink because the Nats played at the same rink. They show up and watch their games before ours, and they sit there and they'd know kids. And it was really rewarding to see the brotherhood that was building. And, you know, we won the championship in both teams, and it was crazy that, you know, it was such a whirlwind. We won in the OJHL after already winning the Ontario Midget Championship, and I flew out to Moose Jaw for the TELUS Cup, and then I had to fly back for another tournament. Then I had to fly to Vernon for the RBC Cup at the time, which is a centennial now. And I got an offer from Andre Tourney, was coaching in the NHL at the time with Colorado, and Jill Bouchard was the head coach in Rouyn-Noranda. And so I got an offer that year to go there, and Andre kind of said, hey, if you want to bring in a coach, bring in a guy who's been a head coach to help you out, because, you know, you don't have quite the staff in Rouyn-Noranda that you might have in a bigger city. So you might want to have a guy with a little bit more experience and more hats. So I got the offer, and you know, I thought about it long and hard, and I really wanted to get to Major Junior in the OHL at the time, but I was like, you know what, I'm going to pass. So I think they were a little dumbfounded that I passed, and it was kind of, for them, it was like, well, how bad do you want to be a coach? And I was like, well, I still think I can get there. So I ended up going back to the Patriots for a year and went back to the Nats, and the Patriots won again, and the Nats win the TELUS Cup. So they came calling again a second time, and it was a little bit better offer, and it was also a better role, I think. So I decided to go to Rouyn. And I had a house in Toronto, and don't even get me started about the price of that house today, what it would be worth. But I think I would have it for $400K in my pocket if I owned that now. But I didn't get into coaching to get rich, that's for sure. I would say it was very rewarding to get the opportunity, and then when I got there and I got to see the Major Junior, Quebec Major Junior League, and the players we worked with, it was phenomenal having, you know, those guys that were such specimens of training and work ethic, and I think it was the perfect fit for me, the head coach. I'm more of a gregarious type. I like to speak my mind. I'm a little bit more outgoing. And having that relationship with those guys, bringing a guy with my personality was probably a little unique to that situation, and it worked. So we ended up having a successful year. We win the championship, go to the Memorial Cup. So it was something that, you know, 3 years in a row, I've got 5 titles, and it's like, wow, I'm pretty pleased at that moment.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely pleased whenever you see success on the ice. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, you were talking about there just how your players were developing, you know, the program with the Titans and the Patriots, or the Nats and the Patriots, sorry. And, you know, going to the queue is a lot of people know, you know, it's a big adjustment, and sometimes it has to be the right fit. I think that it was a good point there in how you were kind of looking at the OHL and maybe it wasn't the right role or the right timing. And it's okay sometimes to kind of take a step back and say, you know what, I'm going to wait for maybe a new opportunity or one that maybe fits your time frame better. And ultimately, after having our successful year, Rouyn was willing to kind of change the offer for different reasons. And you were able to go there and go through that experience. And ironically enough, in 2016, 2017, another offer would come your way, this time in the OHL as an associate coach with the Kitchener Rangers, again, bringing you right back into the Toronto area. So, you know, how did maybe the Kitchener experience differ from Rouyn, and Just walk us through that season as well, now back in the OHL.
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate to have been an assistant with the Nats with Brett Punchard running the Nats program. But I had a lot of pull and I had a lot of, opinion-based. We'd run some various situations and systems similar to what I was doing. Then I went to Rouen, and there was a learning curve for me and also how to work with somebody that is set in certain ways. And it took time. And I got to say, it was something I needed to do to learn and grow as a coach, because if you're a good coach, you should be able to be an assistant as well. And you create your own barrier. So I really felt like I was becoming a better coach and a better assistant coach at that time. And then Kitchener came calling. It was, their coach went to the NHL. They had an opening. I was offered the job. It was a big pay raise. At the end of the day, the pay raise was enough to make me want to leave. But the fact that I was going to be able to work with two NHLers, I got the associate head coaching title, but it really wasn't. I was more the second assistant, which is something that I could talk about to a lot of people, where I feel that second assistant, you gotta know what you're getting into. For me, it was a tough year because I just went from, winning a bunch of years, going to major junior, being the lead assistant where I ran the D and I ran situation, then going to Kitchener where I was predominantly, I thought I was going to do more skill, but it wasn't a skill base, and it was more, I did the power play, and it was awesome working with Jay McKee. I think that guy's a phenomenal human being. And Matthew Barnaby to this day is one of the greatest guys that I had a great time. There were definitely some things with the Kitchener experience I think, I could have done differently. But I also think that it was a program that needed some culture change and needed an opportunity to change maybe even the way that they were doing things. And It wasn't the greatest fit for a guy that enjoyed being a part of the game. The live bullets flying, you're running the D, you're involved, and then just going into running the power play was a little tougher. I created a barrier for myself. But that being said, I learned a ton from those guys, and I had a great experience, and I think it helped mold me for the next go-around when I started coaching again to where I wanted to go to and how I wanted to use my staff. And I learned a lot from Jay McKee, too, just because of how cool he was. And, he's a player's coach, and I think nothing but the best about him. And I think he's going to be in the NHL one day. So the one thing I would say for a lot of coaches that, they get that opportunity to coach on a staff, and now you're the second assistant. Well, it's on you to find out what you need to do to be successful. And with Kitchener, I learned a lot that year, but I also didn't embrace the role as good as I needed to. I didn't get re-upped. Like, we had a GM change midway towards the end of the season. At one point in time, I assumed I'd probably be the next head coach of Kitchener. It didn't look like that was going to be in the cards. And then, Kitchener hired a new GM. And then at the end of the year, when we're evaluating building a staff, that GM had a clear-cut vision of what he wanted. And truthfully, it hurt. I was crushed. I was demoralized. I went through a very sad time in my life where I had all the success, and all of a sudden I'm no longer, as sweet as I think I am. And he didn't want to re-up me, and he just didn't think the way I am. He wanted to build a different staff, and he wanted things differently now that he was in charge. And that's the job of a GM. And I think Mike McKenzie's the guy that took over. And yeah, I was mad at Mike for a while, but I can tell you, retrospectively, I respect him, and I understand what he wanted. He wanted more of a silent partner as that second assistant, somebody that's maybe just going to go with the flow and coach and just teach. And a guy who's opinionated, that's had a lot of experiences, maybe it's not so much about voicing them. It's maybe more about just offering advice when asked, and that's something that I had to learn a little bit. So as tough as it was for me as a coach, it's definitely helped me moving forward.
Yeah, and talking about just moving forward, your next position, still staying in the junior ranks, but kind of taking a different approach this time through the BCHL with the Coquitlam Express. So now having the kind of lessons that you learned in Kitchener and that different mindset, maybe talk about how you applied it in your new position, and just talk about your time in the Express organization.
Yeah, well, you know what? When Kitchener didn't renew my contract, it was tough, and I actually went back to the Nats that year, and I spent half the year at the Nats, and then I got an offer at the end of November to go out to BC, and it was tough because our Nats team was the best in Ontario. They ended up going back to the TELUS Cup, and I had a real big hand in that, and I was like, well, what's the best option for me as a career coach? And truthfully, when I put it all together, I love coaching junior hockey, so I decided to go try something new, and I went out to BC, and, you know, I was the GM head coach. You know, you're assistant GM for just a little while, so until you prove yourself. But I knew the owners. The owners asked me to come in and change a lot of stuff. I showed up, and there was a lot that needed to be changed. It had a winning team a couple years prior. But when you're in Coquitlam, you're the closest suburb to Vancouver. And I got there at a point where the players on our backyard, the best players, weren't staying. And the recruiting we were doing, there needed to be some changes. So going there, taking over the last place team that was amidst, I think, a 14-game losing streak, everyone was down. And I got to go in there and put in some different things. We had some mediocre success to finish the year. And then the next year, had a real good year. Had a lot of Division I players, 12 or 13 Division I commits on the roster. We're above 500. We had a short playoff run against the eventual winners, who never lost a play game except to us during the playoffs. And there was a lot of great things and things to build on. But what probably a lot of guys don't understand is the hats you wear in junior hockey in year two. For the hats that you're wearing, you're not just a GM head coach. You're also working with billets. You're dealing with the bill coordinator. You're on the business side. You're doing much, much more, and you don't have a big staff. So my first year and a half, I wore too many hats, but I do feel that it was all worth it when it came down to the end for our last year that I was there. It was 2019-20, and we just had a phenomenal team. We finished first overall and swept our first-round playoff opponent, and then COVID hit.
Yeah, and I think that's a tough situation that definitely a lot of people ran into recently and around that season, and a lot of people felt like they had maybe the team to kind of go all the way, but for better or for worse, that's what happens. And just kind of building on that, I think being open to different situations has done well for you, and that mindset has given you the opportunity to have success, and with Coquitlam and any junior program, especially the junior A level, as you mentioned. Just the variety of hats that you have to wear and the openness to try different things is so key. And a lot of people might go into a position thinking, okay, I'm a coach, I'm going to be coaching on the ice, that's my job. The reality of junior hockey is sometimes you're going to have to be involved in, like you said, the billet coordinating and working with the families, or being involved on the business side, or helping out with community events. And sometimes it's pretty entry-level work that you need to do, but I think to be successful in any junior hockey role, you have to be open to ultimately getting your hands dirty and doing whatever is necessary to help the team succeed both on and off the ice.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a requirement that the more you know about the business, the better it is, and you understand the challenges of each position, but also I would say the humility to treat all the staff as, you know, they're part of the program. Like when we were in Coquitlam after games, I would have 10 guys down in our office. We'd have people that were volunteering their time, whether it was for our video stuff. You know, I hired two different people basically and paid them out of my own pocket just to come in and do video. And I didn't pay them a lot of money, but I gave them an honorarium of a thank you for doing this. It takes hours out of my week that I get back into doing something else I enjoy. So it was awesome dealing with those challenges and then finding a solution. It's rewarding. You find a solution and then you open a door to somebody that's extremely excited about that door. It rejuvenates you as well as a coach.
Yeah, that's another great point there. And a lot of times there's students and people looking to get into the game who can really be beneficial in a situation like that. I think video is a great example of one task that sometimes can pile on definitely a lot of extra hours if maybe the coach is struggling or just in the midst of a busy season with a team that hasn't a lot of opportunity to learn. And continuing on the topic of learning, you know, you've gone through all these positions to date in Canada and seen success and taking things from each position. And soon enough, the opportunity comes for you to now maybe see how things work on the state side in the NAHL with Odessa. So talk about the process of going into that junior league, kind of a different situation than the BCHL, but a lot of similarities as well. And then ultimately how that entire experience went for you.
Yeah, last year was extremely challenging. You know, there wasn't quite as big as a reward because COVID was amongst us and there was so much stress every day. Or are we going to play? Are we going to have guys being sick? And then to top it off, going into a complete rebuild where the ownership group wasn't in town. We had other factors that were external that we had to deal with. And it was managing stress every day, trying to figure out where are we going to find players from, scouting, are we playing this week? And then you're looking at, okay, well, we're losing on the ice. I definitely think I learned a lot last year because of how I let the stress get to me. And you know, ego gets to you too, because you feel like if you're such a good coach, well, why are you losing? And you start to complicate things, whereas I probably should have made it more simple. I was always under the impression that I was going to stick with the same principles I did in Coquitlam, where we teach our foundation of how we want to play, even when we don't have the team that we should play that way with, so that the next year those remaining are going to be able to adapt quicker and it's a quicker transition. Whereas if I would have just said, hey, we don't have the guys to play this style, well, we're going to change, play an easier system. But what was different was teaching American players that were, you know, not brought up the same way as a Canadian kid would be to think the game of hockey. So there were some challenges there. It was exciting that you're reteaching things that, you know, I took for granted with Coquitlam at times, because the last 2 years we had a pretty good ball club that we didn't have to say a whole lot about certain issues. But, you know, it was tough. It was a very tough experience, but it was rewarding in a way that towards the end of the year, as we started coming out of the COVID bubble and it started to become a little bit more normal, I guess, if you want to use that word. The relationship side started getting better. We started understanding our players. You know, last year we had 37 one-goal games. I've never been a part of a team that had that many one-goal games. And we were the losers of most of them. And coaching was part of that. But I could tell you, a lot of games we probably could have won that we just didn't get a bounce, and a lot of that was just due to our mindset, and hopefully we've helped transition that, and I believe our players at the end of the year were much better hockey players because of it.
Yeah, and again, I think going through close games and you know, having to fight for every point and every moment, I think is so key, and it's definitely elevated in the year that a lot of teams went through last season, while getting some games and still having that COVID situation kind of looming over you at all times and bubble situations and these different opportunities that kind of came as a result. And that opportunity for you seemed like it was, it was unique, very unique, the year, the situation, as everything we touched on there. But, you know, just also giving you a new league, a different perspective, working with players who, as you hinted at, came through that American system, which, as anyone can appreciate, when you go to different countries, everybody has their own way of teaching the game at the grassroots level and kind of building it up. And in the U.S., it alters a little bit from Canada. Definitely North American style of hockey can be very similar. But when you get into the daily breakdown of the game and everything that is involved in the coaching aspect, it's definitely very different.
I quickly want to let you know that support for this week's episode is brought to you by DraftKings. Week 1 may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off Week 2, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when you bet $1 on any football game, so listen up because you don't want to miss this. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply, and see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Now back to the interview with Jason Fortier, assistant coach with the University of Maine. And just kind of even building on that, one of the things that I always find interesting is when you work with junior teams in the U.S., you know, the NAHL being, you know, a perfect example, really, when you think about it, a lot of these players are dealing with, you know, progressing on the ice. But one of the things that comes into play at that age group is the route to college and the college commitments and kind of building towards that next step. And your next step, ironically, would actually now be in the NCAA as well at the University of Maine. So I guess a two-part question would be to break down how you kind of moved into the University of Maine and also how much of that dealing with college commitments and things like that has helped kind of prepare you for this new opportunity.
Yeah, I would say the college game, I'm blessed, obviously, to have been awarded the opportunity. And the college game is recruiting and then coaching. So as an assistant coach, I'm a lead recruiter. And so by being able to prove that I could recruit and recognize talent has probably been something that, you know, might have allotted me a little bit of a bump in the selection process. And then having a relationship with the new head coach, and he's mentioned it before that it was, you know, when I was coaching junior hockey and I'm promoting players, I wasn't lying. I built it on integrity and trust, and I was honest and forthright when it came to players and what I believed their abilities were and whether they would be successful at college and what was the best area for them to go play in versus, you know, there's different conferences. So I always had a relationship with the coach. So we would talk, and a lot of the college guys would call me about players in our league because, you know, as you know, when you're coaching hockey, you get to see a lot of players that you compete against. And then by doing pre-scouts, you can really identify certain characteristics or habits and things within a player because you're looking for those things. And when certain players keep popping up in front of your pre-scout, you know, I would be the type of guy to call a school and be like, you might want to look at this kid. I'm doing a pre-scout, and he looks really good. So I would just try and do that to help the players in our league. It was more of a way that I could be somebody that helped our league get recognized, but also help those schools find players, you know, maybe if they weren't there. So that was something that I think helped me out down the road. And getting this chance right now coaching college, you know, there's long days everywhere. It doesn't matter whether you're coaching college, a junior, or minor hockey, you put in the hours you want to put in, and I'm a rink rat. I love it at the rink. I love, you know, doing hockey stuff and watching hockey TV, and, you know, it's a great way, and I almost feel like if I'm not watching it, somebody else might be. So I spend a lot of hours watching different players, and now with Instat, it makes the job a little bit easier. But it's so rewarding when you recognize talent, and then down the road that talent takes off and they do really well. You're not maybe directly responsible, but it also gives you that self-recognition to yourself that, hey, you know what? I spotted that. I'm okay. That's what I'm looking for. So you start to build a pattern of what you're looking for, what your intangibles amongst players, how they look, how they play. You know, what your non-negotiables and your negotiables might become when you're evaluating, you know, and everyone has a different eye, but there's some commonalities amongst each eye.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, your experience is offering a lot of different viewpoints for listeners, just because, like you said, in college, a lot of recruiting and these things are involved in the coaching staff, and you've kind of taken on that role with the University of Maine, and again, built on kind of your reputation for both evaluating talent, but also the honesty, the integrity in the process. And I think a lot of times people are kind of wary maybe of that process. Anytime you see kids going commitments
and moving and all these different things when you have a team and you have someone that's shown in the past that you're willing to put the player first and look for the right situation and ultimately have success at the end of the day on both sides of the equation. I think that's key. And the University of Maine, a great program, and a lot of people recognize the program and have watched before, and you now find yourself in that situation. But it's kind of been a full or a long road, I guess, in kind of getting there, just, taking your time throughout your career and kind of having a taste at each level. And the AAA level seems like it had a really big effect on your career. And it seems like that's the case with a lot of the coaches that come on the podcast and ultimately have that experience. So I guess the question for you here is, for people maybe listening and looking to get into the field, how beneficial or how important do you feel that AAA experience is before kind of making your way into junior and beyond?
Well, that's a long question because I'm a little bit different when it comes to hockey. I'm a big believer of if you are doing something to get something out of hockey, you're going to be disappointed. If you're expecting to go down somewhere or do this for the reward of X, you're probably going to be disappointed. It's got to be a little bit more internally motivated to learn and build. And if we're talking about, going to minor hockey is winning everything. Okay, well, then that's the million-dollar question. If I don't win, how am I going to get noticed? Sure, I understand that. And then maybe I'm not the right guy to ask, but I feel like development is development. And if you're developing right, you will have better teams. It doesn't mean you got to win the title every year to be successful. If you're always looking at whoever raises the trophy did the best job, you're probably going to be let down 90% of the time because you can't win every year. Now, the good programs, you go to those programs, say you're in Toronto and you're at the Toronto Marlies. Chances are back in the day you were going to win or be one of the top two on most age groups, maybe not U18, but on most age groups. And it was like, okay, well, why does the Marlies not have a good U18 team most years? Well, if you look at the big picture, well, for their entire minor hockey career, kids tried out for the Marlies and been cut. Now that the year that they get rid of all their top U16 players, they open the doors and say, we welcome you. Well, a lot of players have a bad taste in their mouth, and they're like, well, I don't want to go play there now. That's not the Marlies anymore. All their guys are gone. So it's more, I had to learn, it's more based on age demographic. So if you're saying the 94 age group, the 98 age group, the 90, all the parents know who the best players are. They all go in the same tournaments. So if you really want to be a hockey guy, get to know the age groups, get to see the players. I created my own company in the summertime. I started doing stuff with players, and I started getting players from other programs just to train with them. And it opened up my eyes to see what other guys were doing and what flaws they had of their habits versus their skill. Because some kids had tremendous skill and very poor habits. So you start to make an impact and, all right, well, I can't really do much more on your skill. You're already good, but we can help your habits. We can put more attention to the detail. And for guys go to minor hockey, development's got to be the mindset. And if you're there long enough, you should have a good program. Because if you're doing your job, people will come, and they always do. It just takes time. Like you, I always say to people, don't judge a coach on year one. Yeah, a guy might not do well year one. Year two, okay, should be pretty good. But by year three, year four, year five, that's when everything should be humming. It shouldn't take 4, 5, 6, 7 years before you get the recognition or the trust from people to allow their kids to be coached by you. And most young guys that I find that coach now, everyone wants to get up so fast. Everyone wants to, I want to be in the NHL. I want to be in the OHL, or I want to do this. Well, at the end of it, you get into coaching not for yourself. You still want to move up. You still want to have success. It's got to be the right timing. It's got to be a lot of things falling into place. And if you just do your job and develop it, that's going to be rewarding. It may not pay the bills. You know, I've been coaching for a long time. I've had owners in junior hockey programs not pay me. I probably have $80,000 where I've been ripped off by owners in junior hockey because the season ends. And what do you do? Go to small claims court? So it's not a business that you're just going to get rich or always get the greatest things. But if you love it, I'll say it on here. I would have did it for free. That's the truth. I enjoyed it, and I got paid, I think $6,000 for my first 3 years coaching as an honorarium. And I thought, hey, I remember calling my dad. This is unreal. They paid me money to go do what I love. And I get to go shoot on goalies and go talk to kids. I'm almost 47 now. And, you know, at times I feel like I'm still 25 because I'm around these young players that they have such energy and they force you to have that energy. But, you know, you're also in an environment that is so, you know, demanding on your time, demanding on your energy and your stress, but also rewarding in your relationships and what you're doing with players. And that's what I get a kick out of it is, you know, I'm not looking to be their best friend, the only guy in their ear. I want to be somebody that can make a difference, but be there when the chips are down. I need somebody to talk to. So I think minor hockey is an essential part of development. And I'm not saying you have to go through it, but it is very essential in your development of trying new things, not just doing whatever you see on TV. You know, you watch the NHL, there's guys running systems. Well, if you just copycat everything, you know, something you got to have a thought of your own. And, you know, you might steal ideas from the NHL, or you might steal ideas from your local peewee team, your local junior A team, whatever it is. And it's more about the habits and details you teach within a system than the system itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's another great point that you're bringing to the podcast here. And just quickly, I guess, building off of that, you have this mindset and the reasons for coaching, whether it be at the AAA level or junior level, and you've hinted at it there and throughout the podcast through your different answers. And I guess one of the things that a lot of people talk about is having people around you that kind of either had that same mindset or are willing to challenge you a little bit at times. So I guess, what are just your overall opinions on building a staff? And do you prefer to have everybody with that common goal, or is it sometimes good to maybe have someone that challenges you and maybe pushes you in a different direction just to kind of see what works at the end of the day?
Well, first off, I'm divorced, so I love to argue. I have nobody to argue with anymore, so I have no problem with our staff with confrontation. Is it confrontation on ego, or is it confrontation for development? There's two different ones, and as long as it's for development, and trust me, everyone's got an ego, and we all argue over our ego at times. But, you know, I don't think it's one or the other. So when I build a staff, part of being a coach is I talk about the ability to influence human behavior. As a coach, my job is to influence that thinking, that mindset, and their behavior, that it's not even just players, it's staff. And I'm not the best at it. You know what? I'm fat and out of shape. That's as simple as it goes. And people always say, well, you know what? If you took it serious or you had the look, you would get further up in hockey. Well, I always go in interviews and people ask me, what do you want to do? And if somebody said to me, do you want to coach the NHL? I'd say 100%, I'd love to. But it's not my goal. It's not my be-all and end-all. I want to have relationships. I want to do this and do the best I can with wherever I'm at. And my long-term goal was to eventually become an NHL scout. If I'm not a coach, I can be a scout, and I would be very happy. Would I miss things? For sure. So when I build my staffs, I look for passionate people that are willing to work, that don't understand that no is part of our vocabulary. You know, when I say no, that means, well, how can we? I like guys that fight me on things. I like guys like when I'm going and I get going and I think I got an idea, I want some pushback. I want some feedback of, you know, I always talk to people. It's a lot easier to tell a guy to stop talking so much than it is to get him to talk more. And, you know, with our staff that I've built over the years that I've had, the best ones are the guys that I didn't have to always worry about. I didn't have to, oh, who would you say to him today? Oh, do you talk to that guy? Why'd you talk to him? Like, just let them do their job. They're in it for the same reason. And I've had a lot of great assistants, and I've worked with a lot of great head coaches. I really think the staff is if you really want to break it down, the nuts and bolts is, you know, you got to find people that are willing to put the program first, people that are willing to work, and work ethic is different for everyone. I'm going to tell you, about 2 weeks ago, I changed my mindset of work ethic, but I was the guy that came to the rink at 8 o'clock and I left at 8 p.m. a lot of times. I don't have social life. I just, for me, I feel like if I'm not doing something hockey-related, somebody's getting an edge on me. And I don't know why I do that, whether it's just something that I choose to do, but I'm going to work on that to try and, you know, get a social life. I'd like to start having relationships outside of hockey again and start doing things, but it's more having people around you that you know, some guys can staff that they enjoy spending time with. It's an easy relationship. They're fun. You know, you guys have, for me, I want people that want to come to the rink and have a relationship, have honest conversations. I don't like anything phony. I am so real that I do not like phony. If you don't like me, I can work with you. Tell me what you don't like, and I'll try and change what I can. And if I don't have something about you, I'm going to tell you. And I've always been a straight-up guy that way. It's just, yeah, I can respect a guy that I don't like everything about. I have some of my best buddies. You know, you grow up with them. You don't love everything about them, but they're still your best buddies. There's stuff that, you know, all your real friends in life have flaws. All the people you care the most about, a lot of them have flaws. They're not perfect. So why do we always look for people that are perfect? It bugs me how, oh, you know, this person does that. Well, yeah, but it could be the person that when your car's broke down 2 a.m. and you need, you know, gas money or you need something, that person that might give you the difficult time might be the guy that comes to get you too, though. So you got to look beyond the easy topics and really start getting into the, for me, the work ethic side of things.
No, that's a great way to look at it. And I think at the end of the day, if everybody has the same mindset and is not challenging each other, you kind of get caught in a groupthink situation. But having people who are, you know, honest, but also, you know, easy to work with and hardworking and all these different things, it really plays into the ultimate success of a team. And looking at your career and some of the things that you've talked about here today, you know, you've had success at different levels and a lot of great moments, a lot of big games. So a fun question that we sometimes ask the guests on the podcast, is there any one moment in your career to date that you can kind of think back to that was kind of like a you made it moment or just a memorable one for a variety of reasons?
Well, I don't think there's a moment that I made it because I haven't. I'm obviously having success doing what I'm doing, but I've never made it to the NHL. But it was pretty cool being a major junior. You know, you're on the big Jumbotron. I got to coach in 2003, got to go to the Memorial Cup. Those were all great. And then even before that, you don't know what you don't know at the end of the day. So I didn't know any better. So when I won in midget, it was unreal. I made it. Then I won in junior A, and I was like, unreal, I made it. It's like, what has made it? At the end of the day, there's, you know, I don't believe in there's just like that one goal set mindset. This isn't, I'm not reading books a lot on self-help saying, you know, what's the point where you feel like you made it? Or is being comfortable bad or a good thing? I think you got to be comfortable with yourself first. Until you can look the guy in the mirror, you're never going to love what you're doing. So it's a big part for, you know, enjoying what you're doing. Because you win in midget, you win in peewee. Yeah, maybe it's not the same way to get there, but it sure is satisfying. It's a big thing giving back. And even if you don't win, you know, like some years you got a bad team, but all of a sudden you got a group of people that love what you did. Well, not many guys can do that because they only want to be on a winning team. Or maybe some guys can only work with low-end performance teams because their mindset is a low-end performance, but they're unreal for building, you know, self-confidence. Like, they're just, we're always quick to dismiss people because of results and records. And again, I'm the first guy to say I don't love a lot of coaches if they're consistently just satisfied with poor performance. But again, we got to find that navigate that stream where there's players can fail more often. And it's not junior hockey. It's not our area of junior hockey. It's in the lower areas. But everyone's so quick to try and win, you know, that bugs me. But as far as finding a moment that I made it, you know, truthfully, I don't know, but I had an aha moment one time when I was coaching junior A. I heard Mark Edwards, who runs Hockey Prospect. They do a great job, and he was my assistant. And I coached against him, and I really respected him. He had never played hockey, like, too far. I think he played, like, minor hockey, and maybe in junior kind of got pushed out for whatever reason. And then we were coaching, and this was in, you know, I think it was in the player selection time, and we were talking on the phone, and I was, you know, telling him my opinion, and I suffocate a lot of oxygen in conversations, as you can tell. And we were talking, and he was mentioning something, and then I was like, he's trying to talk about the psyche of the player and this and that. And I said, you know, no offense, Mark, but you never played at a really high level. So, like, I don't think you understand. Like, I don't buy that. And then, you know, and this was a guy that I didn't know overly well, but we were friends, and we'd go out and have, you know, dinner. We'd have a couple beers, talk hockey, and very amicable relationship. And he was a guy I coached against that I respected because he always seemed to have some good detail and he recognized talent. So he sent me an email about 10 minutes after our conversation saying we're friends. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to coach with you this year. I just think for our relationship, it's probably better. I got a lot of stuff going on, and I think he had a young daughter, maybe like a year or two old, and he's like, I just can't do this because of the time constraints and all this stuff. So I immediately called him, and I was like kind of like poking at, you know, what the real issue was. And the aha moment for me was when he said, I respect you a lot, but if every time I challenge you or we fight over something that you have the trump card of, because I never played pro or I never played high-level hockey, I'll never win an argument, so we'll never get to our potential as a staff. And now, it was unreal for me to go through that. I'm thankful every day that he did that to me and said that, because he didn't want to say that, but, you know, by going with confrontation and having that conversation, which today nobody wants to talk, we had that conversation and he said it. I took it in and I agreed, and I'm an idiot and I apologized, said we got to work through this. And we had an unbelievable year together. He was a good coach, taught me a lot. He claims he taught me a lot about power play, which I still argue with him, but like it was such a defining moment for me. And I think I've always been a guy that when I was a head coach, my staff would say I was probably tough at times, but you know, I was easy to work for when we were doing all the things and we were well prepared. And I think I owe him a little bit of that.
Yeah. Anytime you have those honest conversations, I think it's going to, you know, result in the betterment of a staff or betterment of a team. And sometimes, as you could see there, it is a tough conversation, and sometimes it's a little bit of an argument or a confrontation or going against the norms of whatever the situation may be. But again, at the end of the day, it can kind of lead you in the right direction and really go into some untapped potentials. So I think that's a great answer. And you know, you learn those lessons from conversations, and a lot of times it could be with people who are part of your staff, but it could be people who have more experience in the game or people who've kind of gone through situations like that before you. And those people who oftentimes are referred to as mentors tend to have a big impact in a lot of people's lives. So I guess the question here is, you know, essentially throughout your career, who are some of the key mentors who maybe helped you along the way? And just collectively through your conversations, what are some of the major lessons that they taught you?
For me, the mentors that I had were many. I don't believe it's been a long-term mentorship with anyone, you know, directly. I learned a lot of values and ethics from my family, my parents, and, you know, people that know my father. My father's got a reputation of being a good athlete, and it's something that, you know, he's made mistakes even, and he's a hot-blooded French guy that, you know, probably loses it too much when he was young. He probably flew off the handle a bit too much, but he was always one to admit when he was wrong, and was very passionate to helping people. So I think that was something that helped me. And then the greatest mentor I had as a former coach was a guy named Johnny Fuselli in Sault Ste. Marie, midget triple-A. Did a lot for me. Was a very stern guy at times, but he was fun. Like he was the type of guy that would make fun of you a lot, and it wasn't always that common for coaches that were older to make fun of us on our level and treat us like human beings, and they were part of the gang, and I really liked how he did that, and I've carried that forward. You know, you ask any player that, you know, played for me, I probably chirped them as much as anyone, and I loved it. I thought he was on our level, and he was still stoic in moments where he was still tough on us, and he taught us a lot. And he was the guy that when my career as a junior hockey player began, he was a big reason for that. He made a call. He, you know, he talked to a guy that took his word through the years. He's built that trust and respect. And that coach took me solely on his words. Yeah, I still had to go try out, but I'm sure his words carried a pretty big luggage when I showed up.
Yeah, definitely. I think just from, from that answer and everything that we've heard today, there's a lot of people that have mentored you or taught you different lessons. And I think in the game of hockey, anytime you go through a career or in the game as long as you have been, you're going to meet a lot of great people and establish a lot of great relationships. And as you said earlier, those relationships and those connections and helping people along the way in their different stages of their careers and their lives is the reason for getting into this game.
The relationship side of hockey is key, and being with the University of Maine, we have a new young head coach. Ben Barr has put together win teams and numerous different programs, and his last one, he was with UMass for 5 years, and I've had former players play for him. Working with him in the last little while has been very, very surprising to know how much I didn't know. I knew a lot, I thought, but even in the simplistic side of the game, I love how much attention the detail he's put in, and I would say I'm more complex as a coach, and he's more simplistic, but yet he's added some complexity to being simple, where I've learned that already, and just having a guy, he accepts me for, who I am. If I want to say something to him, that's that relationship side where he's got a growth mindset that he wants to hear me out. He might not want to do what I'm saying, but he'll hear me out, and he'll kind of make fun of me and be like, "Hey, we'll do that another day, but let's just walk before we run." Sometimes as an assistant, you get a little bit excited. You want to keep putting in another step. But he's been great, and having a guy like that running the University of Maine, I truly believe that Ben's going to be an NHL coach one day if he chooses to be. He's got a great demeanor with the players, and I'm very thankful that I get to see this side of the game, not just the major junior side, but the university NCAA athletic side, where, it's a different system. There's different time constraints. There's a lot of different age demographics, 24-year-olds. So, I'm learning a lot, and I feel like I'm growing every day, which is awesome.
Yeah, and anytime you can continue to grow and take on new challenges, I think it's exciting, and definitely at the end of the day is the reason that we're involved in this game, and hopefully it continues as you move forward in your career. And with that, Jason, again, I just want to thank you for taking some time today to join me on the podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and learned a lot as a result, and I'm sure listeners will say the same. So thank you again, and I wish you all the best here with Maine and moving forward.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and it was an honor.
All right. Thank you very much again, and take care.
One thing that fans within the game, hockey minds, and players can agree upon is that when done responsibly, there's nothing better at the end of the day than a cold beer that you enjoy for both its taste and its aroma. And this segment of the Hockey Minds podcast is brought to you by Kitty Vitty Brewery. You can visit their tap room, now open 7 days a week, and their new retail location in St. John's, Newfoundland at 16 Harborview Avenue. If you're one of those people who are maybe looking for some more entertainment, somewhere to sit with friends, you can definitely check out their original location in Kitty Vitty, Newfoundland. Join the Kitty Vitty Craft Club at kittyvittybrewery.ca and give them a follow on social media to keep up to date on the latest brew news. If you're not from Newfoundland and not from the East Coast and you want to get involved, definitely follow them on social media and learn more about their beer, which is great for the casual beer drinking fan and also the beer enthusiast. And stay tuned, because who knows, maybe they'll find their way to get their beer to a location near you. Check out Kitty Vitty Brewery today for more information on their beer, clothing, and all things Kitty Vitty Brewery. I'd like to again thank Jason for coming on the podcast and diving into the area of coaching and providing some key behind-the-scenes details into life as a coach and the differences in different coaching roles, which I think really adds a lot to the podcast and offers excellent insight for our listeners. If you would like to get in touch with Jason to learn more about his experiences, I encourage you to reach out to him directly, or you can contact HockeyMindsPodcast@Outlook.com and I can help make that connection for you. Tune into our social media pages in the upcoming days as we release a flurry of new guests, which will bring a lot of excitement for the upcoming podcast episodes. Once again, thank you everyone for supporting the podcast, and be sure to like, share, and subscribe on all the platforms that you listen to, and share with friends as we look to have more people understand what's going on in hockey operations at all levels of the game. As always, stay safe, and all the best.